Hello, welcome to the next exciting adventure of DCE Pirate Radio. If I'm a little bit distracted during this intro, it's because I have my new puppy Zeke sitting on my lap and trying to eat the microphone, the cord, and my shirt, which is a dramatic improvement because he tried to bite me on the Wilhelm quite a few times, much to my upsettedness. I didn't like it. You can probably imagine, not a huge fan of a dog with sharp teeth trying to bite my willy off. Anyway, straight to the point, we have another episode today. It's our first episode with a guest. We have Luke Howard joining us on the podcast, who the reason that I've done this intro again is because I asked James to do a bit of an introduction at the start of the podcast, you know, explain what we're doing, explain who we are, explain who Luke is, and he did a typical James fuck up and misunderstood and did nothing that I'd asked him to do. So that's why we love him. So we have Luke Howard joining us on the podcast. Luke's originally from Adelaide with us. We knew him from here. And then about 2 years ago, he moved to Bali to pursue his MMA career and now lives there and trains out of Bali. So if you've listened to our previous podcast, we were in Bali at Bali MMA, training away and drinking. But Luke was there. Now he's back in Adelaide. We asked him to come on the podcast and we had a good conversation. He certainly, for anyone who thinks that MMA fighters are a bunch of dummos, well, we found at least one that can have an intelligent conversation. Incredibly more intelligent conversation than what me and James normally put out. So, without further ado, enjoy.
But, yeah, we've got to get down to business. This is no time for nonsense. Well, I'm just talking by myself now. Hi, I'm James. I'm in a room by myself.
Well, I feel like you didn't quite understand what "do you want to do the intro" meant.
Oh, yeah. Right. Gotcha. I thought you were talking about the intro that Skippy was doing for us, but that's all
okay,
right.
Okay, don't worry. There's only 30 seconds of useless shit at the start of this podcast.
Of every podcast, followed by another hour or so of it.
Let's try that again. And 3, 2, 1.
This reminds me of when we were doing the MKR audition. I'm not very good at these being put on the spot. It's James and Matt here from DCE. We've got a lovely young lady here in the studio with us today. By studio, I mean Matt's lounge room.
Slash gym. There is a squat rack in the corner, which kind of threw me off as soon as I walked in.
Do you want to pump out a couple sets?
He's a very busy man.
Oh, it's an email from yet another company I had to give my email address to and will send me weekly shit.
Yep. Try registering a fucking web address, mate.
Guys, yeah. Did you know you could get 3 suits for $149 at Oxford this
what
weekend?
What are we doing here? That's 3 of us, 3 suits.
Oh, sorry, no suits. Imperative shirt deal. 3 shirts for $119.
It's
there
not,
you go.
It's not grabbing me as much. Different. I wanted a suit.
All right. Shall we, while the jammer is still warm.
Do you want to introduce our guest?
I did.
Well, young lady doesn't quite give everyone an
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, no, we've only got the age wrong, the gender. Don't worry, this is a Dirty Clean Eats, now gender fluid. There we go, tapping into that.
I didn't
ever
want to assume your gender. mic drop.
Oh, and we're out.
No, your reputation should precede you, really.
Oh, that's...
Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself, Luke?
A little bit about myself.
Internationally acclaimed man of mystery.
Yeah, well, I'm just the chief Jammu tonic tester. Oh, yeah. I'm probably actually the only person in Adelaide that's ever heard of this.
You introduced us to it.
Yeah, it's Jammu tonic. It's an interesting fact about Jammu tonic. It's about 1,200 years old. It's a traditional drink for Indonesian people.
You already know so much more.
Yeah. Yeah. So much more experience about this than us.
You're loud.
Yeah.
You're getting closer and louder.
I feel like you're being racist now.
I'm going to pretend like I actually knew that, but it was the the result of a 5-minute Google search this morning with my morning coffee. I actually didn't know jack shit about Jammu tonic besides that my friend gave it to me one day in Bali and I was just like, hey, this tastes pretty good. And he's like, it's good for a cold. And I'm like, I'll take 2.
Your 5 minutes research is more research than done combined.
Well, all I did was research how to make it. I didn't actually go into the origins of it. I just figured, you know, it's got good stuff. It's got things that have lots of buzzwords in it, like turmeric and ginger and...
Oh, we're going to come right up top of a Google search.
Oh, yeah. Didn't even think of that. And I've just been telling random people about it, but I do that anyway.
Yeah.
Everyone I know that's like, oh, I've got a bit of a cold. I'm like, you need Jammu. They're like, what's Jammu? I'm like, ah, that's a good question.
You're not in the
It's
know.
A good question, and I'm glad you asked. It's a special thing that I'm about to start making and selling.
For three easy payments of $17.99.
Exactly.
You're too good a salesman, though. It's hard to tell if people actually like the product or whether it's just you being a salesman.
Yeah, but that's that's what's puzzled me thus far. Everyone I've given it to has been like, oh, that's really nice. And I'm like, oh, because I've been selling it as like some people like it, some people don't. It's a bit of an acquired taste.
I feel like you have to, when it's someone's first time trying it, you have to be there for the experience just to reassure them that that's actually what it's meant to taste like. Because like when you look at the ingredients list on its own, nothing particularly sounds appetizing about drinking turmeric, ginger, pepper, lime, and vinegar.
Mm.
I missed out. There are secret ingredients.
There are secret ingredients. A few people have asked me that.
But they're the base ingredients. I mean, you look at it and you go, wow, it's full of turmeric because it's bright yellow.
Orange.
I wouldn't really call that orange. It's a dusty yellow.
Dusty. I like it.
Dusty yellow.
I feel like I should describe this setup, because it might be me in a divorce proceeding explaining what happens. So James has come over. He's got his little turmeric in shot glasses for us to do our taste testing. But he's decided to bring it in the middle of my lounge room over the carpet in little shot glasses and put it on a flimsy...
which Luke is now rocking.
Three-legged little stand. So,
oh, this is straight out of the reject shop, this.
Oh, I reckon...
Don't stop shaking it.
This is
both
a
of you.
$5 set.
So let me tell you all a story about how stupid James is for putting this on this table while we both fucking shake it.
Yeah, I mean, this table is definitely not earthquake proof.
Well,
just putting that out there now.
Well, part of the stupidity of this whole thing is putting it near us.
Well, that's fair. I'm getting a stare. I do this every time.
This is why you're going to be quiet, because you walk off again.
I'm clumsy at the best of times. I mean, this is just not bright.
I'm the wrong combination of clumsy, and I also sometimes just like to knock things over just to see what happens.
Sometimes I like to just let anarchy rule. Actually,
no one can hear you.
I just realised I could take a photo of it so that I can... So people can understand what I'm talking about.
No one can hear what you're talking about. I feel like a broken record.
Anyway, you look like a broken record.
I'm going to move the mic closer to James.
Yeah, let's move it over next to James.
That's going
to
sound...
I feel like you could almost hold it.
Hello?
Right, so what have we got here? We're testing...
This is number one.
Number one.
We drank a bottle of it straight just before, but I figured for comparative purposes.
All right, so for everyone who can't see right now, which is, well, everyone... I'll break down what we're doing. We have three samples of three base recipes of Jammu, and we're going to do a bit of a live taste test for you and give you our honest opinions.
Is this straight or is this mixed with water?
No, this is mixed with a little bit of water. So it's a 10 mil. It's the recommended 10 mil serving with about 15 mils of water. So it just... I was going to say lubricates it a little bit, dilutes
it. Oh, so I drank 10 serves before.
Yeah, you drank a lot of Jammu earlier.
Yeah, right.
But that was... Anyway.
Probably why it's so strong.
So when I got here, I just drank a 100ml bottle.
and I'm feeling good.
Thinking that was a serve. But on the upside, I've cured any cancer that's in my body. So
this will still be kind of strong. I almost would fill them up further, but it's just too hard. Let's go.
What's special about this one?
This is the base recipe, pretty much. So this will be quite apple. Oh, this has got slightly... No, it hasn't. It's got garlic in it. The base recipe didn't have garlic.
So this is garlic plus base recipe.
Yeah.
I kind of just wanted to keep you talking while we drank, so it wasn't dead silent.
Yeah, I got confused.
Hint of, nice hint of garlic in that. It's not too overpowering. The cup is telling me that it's my shout.
Your shout? Oh no, yeah, your shout.
And they're shot glasses.
Yeah, that's what I said. You had almost enough shot because my OCD is like going mental at the moment because I've got six of the same and then three completely different shot glasses.
Well, in my honest and professional opinion, I can say that it's quite authentic.
That's probably really loud and really annoying on the microphone because you're banging that right next to the microphone.
All right, so what do we got on... what's different about number two?
So number two has got a slightly different water to apple cider vinegar ratio. It's got more garlic in it and it's got lime juice.
Okay. Adding lime. changing up the ratio on vinegar to water.
Because the first one, like, I agree.
Mad scientists. Mm.
So this one, you are nuts. And Matt, after telling me how stupid I am, is now shaking the shot glass now, over the...
Now swirling turmeric. Devastatingly close to the rim. Like, I'm watching the remnants of that float closer up, just going, that's going to be on the carpet anytime now.
It's amazing I'm the only one that's married, really.
Oh.
You can taste the garlic in that one.
I like this one. I can't taste this as much.
I think this one's much, much cleaner than the first one.
Also,
it's actually, I think it's more user-friendly with less vinegar.
Yeah. It's also cooked slightly differently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do that would be my recommendation.
Do the second thing.
Do what you were going to do, but that way.
Mm. All right.
And then this one, I think I'm going to call it Dirty Chili. Dirty Chili Jamu.
Okay. Dirty chili. Yeah. Why is it dirty?
Well, because I was going to leave the skin on the turmeric and it was going to be a cloudier colour, but now I'm just going to do it because I do whatever I want, really.
Okay.
Did you purposely not swear then? It seems like you were about to say, do whatever the fuck I want, and you made a conscious decision to not say fuck.
No, my brain, I don't know.
All right, we've been going for like 9 minutes and I think I can firmly assume that the rest of this podcast is not going to be suitable for people that you can't swear around. Like, yeah, I doubt there are going to be too many nuns or small children tuning into this.
I just don't get me wrong, I like swearing, but
I'm quite fond of swear words. I said poo the other night.
Jim Jefferies. I love that man. So yeah, this one similar, but has chili in it and some honey because the chili, I figured the honey might offset.
So this one will fix you, then burn your ringer on the way out.
It's not too bad. Allegedly. It is quite warm.
Okay, I have a shot glass from Adam and Katie's wedding.
And I've got one from Falls Creek.
Both places I never went to.
I like how Dee doesn't really drink, but owns all of the drinking paraphernalia in this house.
It's because I didn't own anything when she moved in. I was saying to Luke when he walked in and commented on the gym in the living room.
The only thing that was here when Dee moved in.
It was that and a bed upstairs for me to sleep on.
I'm trying to work out the clock in the corner. Because the clock in the corner, I'll just describe it for everyone, is a plain white-faced clock with only one number visible, and they've chosen that one number to be the 8. Well, I'm wondering when you design a clock, why you would only make one visible number, the 8. Not really a key functional point of the clock. Like the 12, I can understand.
Yep, makes sense.
The beginning and end.
Everyone's already making 12 clocks, though. You want to point a difference.
Trying to stand out.
You're trying to stand out. Lucky number 8.
Lucky number 6.
Lucky 7.
Depends on the marketing.
Depends on which Asian country you're from.
Lucky 7. I suppose any number could be lucky when you put the word lucky in front of it.
True.
8's my mum's lucky number, so that's maybe where I'm... Maybe that's a very unique perspective I have.
I do like the chili. Nice and spicy. I'm not going to stack that.
Yeah, the first one I'd probably...
The first one had too much vinegar. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that's the whole point of this process is to get our chief taste tester.
I think one's out. One, the vinegar was just... It's...
Rough.
Yeah, it's a little unpalatable for someone who's never had it before.
Mm.
I'm going to say that. Number 2 was definitely easier to drink. I'd maybe increase the lime a little bit.
Mm.
Okay. Was there any honey in that? Raw honey?
Nope.
No.
In the third one, there was.
I'd maybe go with number 2 with the water to vinegar ratio, increase the lime a little bit, add a hint of honey.
Okay. I only avoid honey because Matt gets funny about it.
Funny about honey.
Funny honey.
Bunny. Mummy.
Words that rhyme with honey. Money.
Already the podcast has descended into nonsense.
So we've
we're not even drinking.
We've won the lotto.
We've won the what?
We've won the lotto. Do you think we should put it in the bank? I.e., do you want to take this monstrosity away now that we don't need it anymore?
Oh yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
Okay.
Matt's just gonna pick up the microphone, that'll fuck with everyone for a minute.
But I don't think that's the issue.
You watch I stand up, fall over, drop all of it on the ground.
So we've lost James.
Momentarily, yeah. As he cleans away the shot glasses.
So what's it like being back in the cold?
It sucks. For everyone, we didn't really introduce it before. For everyone listening, like I made the move 12 months ago to Bali. So I have successfully avoided summer for 15 months now.
Avoided summer or avoided winter?
Avoided winter. That's the one I meant.
I didn't even see a problem with that.
Yeah. No, why would you avoid summer?
I'm just like, whoa. Something
was completely not right about that sentence. No, I avoided winter for the last 15 months. So,
what
for me,
you're a redhead?
I can't. My dad's a redhead. Doesn't affect me too much.
You're away with it. I was just trying to think of reasons to avoid summer.
I do get a little bit of a ginger beard.
I've got the same condition.
Yeah, you're talking to the man that took an industrial sized container of sunscreen to Bali.
Okay, yeah. No, so
and
for me, like 25 degrees at night with a bit of a cold wind is enough to put a pants and a jumper on and complain about the weather. So waking up in the morning to 8 degrees or 9 degrees with the sun out is has not been pleasant. It's definitely something that's hard to stomach. Like, I'm currently sitting here in jeans, socks, t-shirt, and two layers of jackets, which is something I wouldn't normally do.
And we're indoors.
Yeah.
We're indoors, and I'm still kind of cold. I can feel it on my hands.
It sounded like for a second there you'd forgotten what socks were.
I've got these bags on my feet.
Well, to be honest, I'm kind of barefoot as much as possible in Bali. Like, I'm that guy that just, I wear thongs all the time. I'm on the mats all day long, so it's like my thongs stay at the front of the gym. When I go out to dinner, I kick my shoes off and will often just walk around. Like, even when we go to, like, say, like, old man's, you go to the bar, like, I've lost that many pairs of thongs because when we're out, I just kick them off and then forget where I put them and someone else finds them.
Speaking of old man's, were you...
Speaking of old men?
Old man's.
Old man's is a bar in Bali, guys.
Yeah. Were you there with us that night? I can't remember. Did you come out at any point? No. Okay. The night we were there, there was an actual bomb scare. The Muslim singing noise people.
Yeah, because that was weird. Because everyone was like, well, that's not normal.
Imagine this, right? There was like, it was Simon, Sebastian. Who else was there? There was probably like 10, 15 of us, I reckon, from the gym all there. And it was the reggae night and they're just, you know, bopping away playing reggae. Then all of a sudden, music stops and this dude starts singing like some sort of Arabic prayer.
Yeah.
But because Allah Allah Akbar is usually what I say to be racist.
Offensive.
But yeah, he was literally singing like Allah Allah Akbar. And everyone's
God is good, God is great.
Yeah. Well, like, they started singing that and everybody.
It's like the translation. Yeah.
We all looked at each other and Simon
doesn't mean run. Doesn't mean like run for your life. I'm about to blow shit up.
It
but
gets better.
It gets better.
So
someone let off a party popper, or
I jokingly said I'm going to go stand next to Sebastian because I figure if anything goes down, I can just hide behind him. Then all of like literally would it have been 10, 15?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, Muslim women with hijabs on all started leaving. Like they literally a group of them just bailed, and then Simon's like, that's not a good sign, and I'm like, Then security all went the other way towards the dance floor. There was like silence for a minute or two, and then the music started again, and it was like, didn't really think much more of it. Then my friend who was over there at the same time as us said, we're going to Canggu for a few days, like, what's good in Canggu? I'm like, oh, these are some bars and rah rah. She goes, oh, old man, there was a bomb scare there the other day, according to the hotels. Like locals from the hotel they were staying in had told them not to go there because there was a bomb scare. So there you go.
Well, it's hard to tell those stories because I assume what had happened is because it was, I think it was the end of Ramadan. So I assume what happened.
Nah, because Ramadan was still going.
Well, I just assumed that someone was doing a prayer and security went, oh shit, these white people are going to be freaking out. We should probably get him off. Maybe. But I didn't think anything of it. I just assumed it was like, well, this is bad for business if everyone starts freaking out.
Mm. All the ladies with hijabs on leaving.
Well, yeah, I didn't see that. Think about it this way. There is no real news outlet in Bali. So every bit of news you you hear is kind of at the end of a Chinese whispers chain.
Balinese whispers, even.
Balinese whispers, yeah. So you're getting second, third, fourth, fifth, up to hundreds.
Look, I survived the bomb scare, all right?
There you go. Yeah. Right. Whatever helps you sleep at night.
I'm basically Jesus.
Whatever you want to put on your resume.
Anyway, I digress.
You just took that to a very dark place.
Yeah. Wow. I got my notes.
We just went from curing cancer to bomb scare.
And we'll go back again.
Be alert, but not alarmed, people.
So I have one question for you.
Yeah.
Because I'm jealous.
You're jealous.
Because you did what I wish I had been smart enough to do before I got too far down the working track, which is pack up all my shit and then move to Bali. Well, it would have been Thailand, but same shame.
It's kind of daunting and scary, and I wasn't sure whether I was actually going to pull the trigger and do it. I mean, the amount of times I hear people say, like, oh my God, you're so lucky. I wish I could do this. And it's like, you can. It actually just takes an incredible amount of, balls to do it. It wasn't just like someone gifted me a new life. Like, I literally, I walked into my boss's office and quit my job. Just saw my life going in a very boring path. I'm like, I don't really want to be stuck in this same place in 10 years time. So I quit my job, basically sold everything I didn't need. I don't own a car. I don't own a bike anymore. I at one stage I had two cars and two bikes. Like, who needs four vehicles? So I just sold all my stuff and just moved to a foreign country by myself, not knowing anyone. And it's probably the best thing I've ever done in my life.
I was going to ask you that. Did you know someone beforehand?
You know what? I'd met the guys from that gym for a week beforehand.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, like, I didn't really know them.
You trained here, didn't you? And you moved there.
Yes.
Because we did. We didn't cover any of that either. Why you?
We haven't covered why you moved to Bali.
Yeah.
Did we?
No.
Because you were supposed to do the intro.
Yeah.
And I asked you three times.
Yeah.
And you've just said, "Young lady."
I'm a young lady from Adelaide and now I live in Bali. Yeah. No, we're only 20 minutes in and we're getting to the cruxes of it. There's a lot of hidden mystery in this podcast. Yeah.
Google it.
Google it. You'll find nothing. No, okay. Should we go backstory then?
Yeah, let's go. Let's go back.
Go from the start.
Let's go from the beginning.
Let's start that Coldplay song.
We'll do it like the Deadpool movie. We'll start at the end. Do a bit of the middle and then
work our way back to the beginning.
Cool.
Okay.
I like that movie.
It's a good movie.
Deadpool was a great movie.
Yeah.
Can't wait for the sequel.
Yeah. I hope they don't fuck it up.
Anyway.
Don't go there.
Yeah. So back to the beginning. So, I'll introduce you.
There we are.
Well, you can know each other better.
Yes.
Thank you.
So, Luke trains out of Bali MMA in Bali. Funnily enough,
it's an MMA gym.
How many fights you had now? Like six professional fights?
Six professional MMA fights. Yep. One professional boxing and one professional Muay Thai as well.
Yeah. And black belt in judo. You won something in judo?
Yeah. So I've just I started in judo. Got my black belt on my Dan grade and set 17. Six or seven national titles, went and competed at the World Championships in 2011. Subsequently, broke my shoulder just after and then gave judo away, sort of just slipped away from me while I picked up work and, started becoming boring.
Yeah.
And an adult.
Yeah.
It's a trap.
Yeah. It is a trap.
That'll get you every time. Ooh. And yeah, you moved to Bali a year ago.
Yeah. So it was April 2016 I left. Just to pursue fighting a little bit more. Like, I was fighting professionally out of Adelaide, and having to work a full time job on top of that to support myself. And I sort of made the decision one day that it's like, well, I literally have until I'm 70 to work. I have maybe the next 10 years to really push myself and test myself as far as professional fighting goes. So, I either had the opportunity of continuing to do it semi half-assed here in Adelaide or pack my shit up and see what I can make of it, trying to do it full time and putting the effort in. And that's what took me to Bali. I found a gym where I originally just planned on moving around until I found a place I fitted in at. So I planned on spending some time in Bali and then going to Thailand and just basically just like almost doing a pick and mix sampling of different gyms. And man, it's just like after my 3 months in Bali, just has turned into 15 so far. And it's like as long as I'm still growing and I'm getting better, I'm probably going to stay there. Like, I don't see moving anytime soon. Like, it just feels like home now. So
that is the one thing.
So if Andrew or Anthony are listening, yeah, it's okay, he's safe.
That is the thing I noticed there, because I've trained in Thailand at a, I suppose, traditional Muay Thai gym, yeah, and I've trained at like MMA gyms there as well. Mm. One thing I noticed about Bali is like, it's got Bali family written everywhere.
Yeah.
But like, you get that, you know, I'm no one, you know, I'm not fighting anymore. I had, you know, one amateur fight and you're done. And you walk in and everyone's your friend. And people treat you like a person, you know what I mean?
It is kind of special in that sense. Like, I find like training in Thailand, like they may have like greater numbers at say like Tiger Muay Thai and like Phuket Top Team and places like that, like AKA. But like training with people who have moved to train at Bali from being full time at those teams and those camps, like the main thing they've said is it's impressive like how our pro team is a conducive team.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the pro teams or the pro sessions at these other gyms, where there you have greater numbers. You also have subdivisions. They also have subdivisions between the teams. So say they may have a mat of 20 professionals. It's like those 20 professionals aren't all working together.
Yeah.
When they break down that mat, there may be these five guys will only work together. Yeah. And then these four guys only work together. And then these three guys like stay on their own.
Yeah.
So within like a 20 person strong pro team, with the air quotes, you'll have like three to four sub teams between that. And then those teams are trying to like, they're not, say it comes to a sparring session, like those guys are literally trying to hurt each other. They're not like sparring
like your teammate.
Yeah, they're not sparring with a teammate. It's like they're sparring with their teammates when they're with those four guys they train with.
Yeah.
When they're sparring one of the other guys in the gym, they're literally trying to take heads off.
Yeah.
So injuries are more common. Things like mat care and hygiene with staff, infection are like way more common because, you know, people don't have that team mentality. They don't care. It's like they're very selfish about their training. They're like, oh, well, I want to train. I don't care. I've already got staff, so I don't care if anyone else gets it.
Yeah.
Whereas like we get those scares in Bali where if someone has something to look like staff, and they'll stay off the mat because they don't want to affect someone else's training.
Yeah.
So it's a very, like, we're a very tight-knit team. So we all have the same goal. So we're all there on the mat. Like if I don't have a fight coming up, like I'm still on the mat helping someone else prepare for their fight because their camp is important to me.
Yeah.
When I'm preparing for a fight, there are people who don't have fights, and then their main objective then is to make sure that I have a good camp.
Yeah.
So we're always working towards the same goal. And I just don't feel like you get that in a lot of gyms. There isn't that classic subdivision where we are.
No, that's definitely the feeling I got there, is that I couldn't articulate it that well.
Mm.
But like, that's the culture there.
Yeah.
Probably the word I would use from looking it up in my head.
Yeah.
Is that like everyone, people give a shit. You can tell people give a shit.
Yeah, people care about your camp. Yeah, and that's the hardest thing to find. It's like your biggest fear when you have a training camp. It's just like you're rocking up ready to train, but you don't want to have to wait for five other people to get there. You don't want to have to be like, you don't want to have that thought in your head when you're preparing for a fight that, oh, I hope people are at training today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? And that's a big difference between knowing you have people you can count on and knowing you have people you might be able to count on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed as well, which I think is a sign of a good gym, is you can't tell who the black belts are until you see them on the mat. You know what I mean? Like, there's no... Some places you go, you're like, okay, that's it's that almost that a little bit the wrong parts of the traditional side of it, where it's like they're walking around and you got to bow and you can't make eye contact, you can't address someone.
It's a little more relaxed. It's not so ego driven either.
Yeah,
like a lot of gyms I've been to, it's just like you almost can't communicate with some people in there that have that perception that they're above everyone else that's training. It's like we don't get that. Like our classes, like although our pro team sessions are somewhat invitational, they're still open to the public. Like there's no closed off sessions where we're like, no, you can't come in. Yeah. Like but in saying that, we're not gonna like say our solid MMA sessions, we're not gonna have just anyone rock up. It's their first time. It's like, there's probably a precursor to that. It's like, as long as you can train with this and you have the skill set to be in a pro team class, we're happy to have you. Yeah. We're not going to not train with you.
Yeah.
You know, there's not purely that
based
like,
on whether you can do it or not, not based on what gym you're affiliated with or who you're doing.
Yeah. It's not like, next. No, this is just our private pro team sessions. Everyone get out because we're better than you. It's like, it's not like that. It's like, if you can physically, have the ability to hang in the training, then like, come on, join us. Like we encourage people to come in. So say like our advanced striking classes are they're at a separate time to the regular striking classes. And they're geared towards the pro fighters. But if someone comes into training and they've had like a bunch of Muay Thai experience or a bunch of boxing experience, and we notice during the other sessions that they're a little bit more advanced, like we encourage them, like, hey, we have advanced pro team sessions at this time. Come along to them.
Yeah.
You know, because that makes us better. Exactly. And we're looking to bring as many people in as possible.
It's the right mentality, and it doesn't necessarily apply just to martial arts either. So that's the mentality I find, like small businesses and everyone, that openness and like basically don't be an arsehole is the general is the general rule. And it's like people don't seem to figure that out because I know about business and everything.
Well, there's so much ego involved in something like martial arts as well, and it's so difficult to get away from. Like, generally, it's so hard to find a place that doesn't have like that very strong, egotistical, driven, like, I'm the greatest. You can't, like, I'm everyone's trying to be the alpha male. It's like,
we had this exact, I can't remember if it was the first or second podcast we did, because we were talking about Bali MMA, and Matt was basically, because I hadn't done it, it must have been the first one, because I hadn't done a podcast before. But that was pretty much my answer when you said, like, what's your first impression? You've done your first week. And that's what I found. There was no, like, there was no ego within that gym, like, which I enjoyed, because, it's like, you know, everyone's trying to be the alpha male, but at the end of the day, you're about to also go and literally prove who is the alpha, like, in those small circumstances. So everyone's just more, like, I'll roll with you, and you'll smash me, and then I'll watch you roll with someone else, and they'll smash you. And it's just like, oh, well, your head can't get too big, because you know, like, and then
it's a constant ego check too, because sometimes, like, we and it's like we all within the team, we all have areas where we're probably more proficient or better than at someone else in the room at. So it's like someone maybe much better at jiu-jitsu than another member of the team, or someone maybe like more proficient in striking and more proficient in wrestling. So you're constantly getting ego checks because you're not just being the top dog all the time. Like, if you ever get to the point where you start feeling like you're I'm just beating everyone, rah rah, and this and that, it's like, and then all of a sudden, like, some dude from the middle of nowhere comes through on holiday for 2 weeks to train, who is an absolute killer. Like, we had Sebastian come in, who's like fighting Ben Askren in September for the ONE FC World Welterweight title.
Yeah,
so he is a legitimately one of the best fighters in Asia, and he just came through, and he was there for maybe 4 weeks in my camp, and like, that was a massive check, because then it's like, you're not just like sparring with people at your own level, you're sparring with people who are so much better than you, and it's like you learn to appreciate very, very small wins, like diminishing returns. Like, you're not considering like a sparring round where you beat the shit out of someone, like, I won that one. You're like, I landed three punches and I didn't get hit quite so much this time. Like you're taking super small victories away, and that's what it is. It's like, and that keeps your ego in check, because there's at any moment you can't think you're the greatest, because someone's gonna walk in who is physically better than you at something. So
he was the first person I sparred with, and I didn't know who he was. And that night, first of all, I looked him up, but I'm just like, am I really that shit? Because I thought he, like, I assumed that he was probably like a kickboxer, or like I thought he was had someone that had a lot of striking background, because he could have his way with me. Yeah. And then I tried to take him down, and he's like, push the hips away, and I got demolished him there. And like, I couldn't even get him to the ground, let alone do anything. I'm like, oh, well,
he's a special individual, that's for sure. He had a great ability to make you feel really inadequate really quickly.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's what a man is.
Yeah. He was the first, but when the first day we went in there, he was the first person I noticed, because I saw, like, you know, his stature. He's a fairly big.
He's a huge welterweight.
He's not a small man, and I like walked in and I just thought, oh, you know, there's a skinhead over there on the bag just shadow boxing. And then I sort of watched. I'm like, wow. I said to you, didn't I? I'm like, he moves really well for a big guy. And you're like,
I had a chat to him about that, because he was about like Sebastian. Think of someone who is, think of a 6'2", 90-kilo Viking.
Hitman.
Yeah.
Hitman, the video game. Looks like him.
Yeah, but with a little goatee.
Yeah.
And so a 90-kilo, 6'2", like Icelandic giant with bad tattoos.
We can edit that out.
Yeah. Don't hurt me, Sebastian. So like just a mountain of a man, just like kind of moving around like nice and slow on the bag, and then like you realize he's just warming up, and he gets into it, and this guy is like a ballerina.
It's nonsense,
the footwork he's going through. And I had a chat to him about it, and I went like, Sebastian, like, I like the way you move is so impressive. And he looks at me and he goes, yeah, I spent some time in the Philippines just professionally boxing with no one that was heavier than 60 kilos. So he's just like, I had to learn how to move like a small person.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's one way to do it. Mm. It's like, you're 90 kilos and he literally moves like a featherweight. Yeah. It's insane. He's so quick and so explosive.
And so big.
Yeah. Yeah. And so big at the same time.
Hence why when we thought there was something going down, I wanted to go stand behind him.
He's immune to bombs.
Probably is.
I reckon you've got a crush on him. Definitely. That's my.
Yeah, you've been replaced. Yeah. You two have both been replaced.
Natural lull. Natural lull in the conversation.
Yeah, you get that.
You do.
36 minutes. Would you want to do my.
Why do you keep 36
minutes
time?
Of nonsense.
Yeah.
We're not, yeah.
Well, I just like to know what time it is.
Well, that's not the time.
36 anyway, is the time.
Would I like to do your watch?
Would you like to do my segment of Matt Might Be Crazy this week?
Oh, yes.
Matt Might Be Crazy. Yeah.
This is a new segment that we started last week.
Yeah. So basically, I vaguely recall a conspiracy theory or something that I've seen.
Holy shit.
And I try to explain it, and James has to tell me if I'm crazy or not.
Have you listened to any of the Ricky Gervais podcasts?
No.
He does a... Is it called the Ricky Gervais Show? It is, isn't it? Shout out if he's not listening.
So this isn't an original idea.
No. It is an original idea of Matt's. You probably got it from another podcast. I don't know. But it's very similar to, like, they have Carl from An Idiot Abroad on, and they just say things to him to see what he says. There was one the other
Carl
day.
Carl clearly is a moron. Fantastic.
Or he's a genius.
Yeah.
We can't work it out. They were talking to him the other day about like sending monkeys into space or something, and he just went off on this on a 20-minute tangent about how it was wrong that they sent monkeys, and it usually falls into madness. But we'll see. Yeah. What have you got for us today?
Well, last week I gave him a segment about how Noah lived to 900 years. So
Noah lived to 900 years.
Yeah,
and they didn't have writing. They used to memorize everything.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I wasn't very prepared. And it was a big shit show, really.
Right, so what have you prepared this week?
This week, I've prepared, as you can see, I spelt jealous, J-E-L-U-S, and that was my question about you moving to Bali.
Okay.
And then I've got Berenstain Bears.
What?
So have you heard,
have
you heard of the Mandela Effect?
Yes.
So it was a
enlighten me.
It was a thing, and then we're probably all too we're all too young. So the good example is the Berenstain Bears. So the Mandela Effect is a phenomenon where people think that it's proof of alternate realities and different timelines. So the basis of it is that there's a when you talk about Mandela, who I can't remember his first
Nelson.
Name, Nelson Mandela, not to be confused with Morgan Freeman.
Isn't that the... Anyway.
No, that's different. That's an entirely different thing.
Okay.
So the Mandela Effect is if you speak to people, there's a vast majority, if not 50% of people, that have a very clear memory in their mind of him dying in prison in the 1980s.
He
didn't
right.
die in prison, according to the other 50%. He got out in the 90s and he became president of South Africa.
Yeah, one of those.
Well, that would be the reality that happened.
Yeah. So, but that's the...
That's a well-documented fact.
Yes, but that's where the Berenstain Bears come into it, because that's one that we're... Because we're too young to know that. Because, you know, we weren't... I wasn't around in the 80s, early 80s, to have a memory of him getting out, because I didn't exist.
Yeah, I was firmly born in 1992.
Yeah.
Firmly.
Oh, so you're younger. Firmly. Yeah, you're even younger again. Like...
Lightly. Partially. Popped out an arm in 91. The rest of me followed later.
It was a tough couple months.
Yeah.
So the Berenstain Bears, though. Do you remember the Berenstain Bears?
No. I have no idea what you're talking
about.
No, but
I've heard... this before.
This is going to be difficult. I've got to, see, I was going to look up other ones, but I didn't end up doing any research.
Yeah.
So the Berenstain Bears is a children's book.
Yeah.
And I remember it as being Berenstain Bears. But you look, then they've got a published picture of it, and it's Berenstain Bears. So it's the same type of thing. So there's heaps of these. Let me... Do you guys talk amongst yourself for a second? And I'll
yeah, you
a
and
quick.
I have actually...
So we're... So what is it? So the Mandela Effect is proving alternate realities?
It's basically like... It's,
I'm not sure
yeah,
how...
I'm trying to find better examples. I thought you guys would know the Berenstain Bears.
No,
you
and I have spoken about the Berenstain
Bears. I'm really
Bears
not sure
before.
How, like...
But basically...
Your memory of the Berenstain Bears affects or...
Yeah.
Proves an alternate reality.
Well, I think what it is it proves how bad our memories are.
Yeah.
But
well, that's... I feel like that's what you're highlighting here.
Yeah. But the theory is it's proof of a
okay.
parallel
so,
universe.
Because Matt's done... Because
no,
Matt's
no,
done
no,
the research.
No. Taking us off topic.
The Mandela Effect is a theory of parallel universes based in the idea that because large groups of people have similar alternate memories about past events, advocates of the theory claim that for these collective experiences to be true, the fabric of reality must have shifted at some point in the past, and that therefore not only do parallel inhabitable universes exist, but that we are constantly switching between them.
Well, I...
I
feel like that more... That less proves the theory of alternate parallel universes, and more proves the theory of you can condition a large mass of people to believe whatever you want them to believe.
Yeah.
It's like, we can take North Korea, for example.
Yeah.
North Korea is shut off from the rest of the world, right? They have no contact with what's going on
outside
of the world. They have no understanding. Yeah. So what reality is like for someone in North Korea would be vastly different to what we experience now, because their knowledge of the world events is so sheltered and conditioned to what they're told. Like, as far as they're concerned, they've won every gold medal at the Olympics, and they haven't even competed.
They're an athletic,
you know.
People.
That's like I think it's a more proof of that you can condition a large population to believe whatever
you
want.
You can control
want.
Reality.
Yeah, you can control that person's reality. It's not necessarily a parallel universe, but it is that person's
reality. Yeah.
And you can condition someone's reality by what information you give them.
I found the example we use when we talk about this.
Okay.
Queen, We Are the Champions.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's how we proved that it wasn't real. So... At the end of...
Prove what isn't real.
The Mandela Effect.
Okay.
So at the end of... This is one of the examples that they use, because I just looked up a top 10, is that the end of We Are the Champions, a lot of people remember Queen saying, of the world. and then you play the official track and they never say of the world. So they were using that as a as proof of an alternate reality because they everyone remembered of saying we are the champions of the world. Then we looked it up and there was a like a the live performance show. Yeah. In the live performance show and on the Mighty Ducks, which is where I heard we are the champions, they say that. So it was just people listening to two different soundtracks.
Yeah.
And then they were arguing about which one was reality or not.
Conditioning and memory.
Yeah. I'm coming back. People just have crappy memories.
Yeah. I think it's more
that fully supports what Luke said.
Yeah, I think it's more proof that you can condition a large population to
depending
believe
depending on what information
to,
you give
yeah,
them.
Yeah, to believe something and change their reality. It's not necessarily creating I wouldn't really call it a parallel universe. A parallel universe would be another universe that is coexisting on a separate plane and happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Like which I don't think those though the we are the champions of the world and not of the world weren't happening at the same time. They were just two different stimuli that two separate populations heard and then they based their opinions on that separately. So yeah, it's more their reality rather than a parallel universe.
Yeah.
Right, it's more yeah, more conditioning and their thoughts rather than like there's the universe where I'm sitting here having a podcast with you guys and then there's another one where I'm sitting on a boat sipping champagne right now. Like that would be two separate parallel universes.
Which one would you prefer?
The one where I'm talking to a flying midget. I don't know.
I'm with you. I find this stuff fascinating though. I find it because that seems logical. That's the response that we came to. That's the response you came to. It's like,
yeah.
Wait, people probably just have shit memories. But then you go on the internet, which is always a bad decision.
Oh.
And there's just pages of people going into this complex about is it the parallel theories at the universe at the same time or is this a proof of a split and all this and it's like did you not take 5 minutes and just go maybe people just have bad memories?
If I put two people in two different rooms,
yeah,
isolated from each other, and create a noise. The noise can be anything. Like I let off a bang.
Yeah,
I tell one of them it was a gunshot. I told the other one it was a party popper or a firework.
Yeah.
Right? They both heard the same sound, but I've conditioned them
to believe
that it's come from two different sources.
Yeah.
Those two people then have two different realities of that one scenario that happened.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't created two parallel universes. I've just conditioned two people's minds to hear the same thing differently.
So, what's the verdict?
Conditioning.
Yeah.
I think.
You're not crazy.
Yeah, you're not...
Well, you are, but in this instance...
This doesn't prove it.
Yeah.
Same as there might be parallel universes, but this doesn't prove it.
Yeah, I don't think that proves it.
Yeah.
I don't think that proves parallel universes. I think it proves that you can literally condition someone to believe what you want them to believe based on the information you give them and not letting them experience other information, you know.
But that, well, like what you said about North Korea, like the same could be said to a degree in America. I think we're quite unique here, I find, in, it's changed now and the internet has changed it a lot.
But I'm going to argue with you on this, but
last time I went to America, which was nearly 10 years ago now, they if it's outside, if it was outside of America, they didn't know what was going on. Like, the joking like, oh, do you have kangaroos in the back garden is like always the question you get. But I convinced some of the guys I was working there with that we didn't have hot water heaters here. We just had rainwater tanks on the roof and the sun warmed it up. And they, like, it wasn't like a, ha, yeah, you're an idiot. Like, that was fact. They were like, oh, yeah, it was only until I said, I thought I'd see how far I could take it. So I tried to convince them we didn't have electricity. And then one of the girls was like, wait a minute, if you haven't got electricity, how did you like apply for your visa? Like it was a good like logical thought process. She's like, how did you get? Like,
so you found one with a brain,
like, basically,
and like, some slight logic.
Yeah, but it astounds me how often like you can ask them what any of the 52 states. I struggle to remember how many.
Well, it's
states
just like human nature is very self-consumed. Yeah. Like everyone gets stuck in a routine and they fail to look outside of that routine. Mm. We're very like humans are like habitual creatures.
Oh, yeah.
It's like how often it's like we'll take like the drive to work in the morning. You don't deviate from the same route you take generally. Like there are multiple ways you can go. You can drive on the roads, but you will stick to the same way you go. You find a way you like, and then you just end up doing it out of habit because you do it day in, day out, day in, day out. You have the one way you go to places. Like humans are habitual creatures. We fail to open up our blinders and like look outside at anything that doesn't directly affect us.
Yeah.
We're conditioned from that, with like from school. So like school was, well, according to a theory I haven't looked up fully, but sounds good. Like school was originally created to precondition you to working in a factory. That's why the desks were all set up in lines. That's why there's like a siren when you had to go to recess, and everything was regimented into little things, and you had to sit down, shut up, do what you're told. Like it was designed to create factory workers.
Yeah.
And we're preconditioned from that. And that's what, and I personally think that's why a lot of issues with schooling at the moment.
We're just creating like self-entitled
assholes.
Oh man, it's incredible.
Yeah. It's like, what went so wrong?
Where did it go? Vaccines, man. Yeah.
it's all in the vaccines. They only cured polio, but whatever.
do you reckon people have always been this stupid and we're just becoming aware of it because of the internet?
I think people are much more self-entitled these days. Like there's such a sense of entitlement among especially my age group and younger. It's like people just believe that they like it's your birthright to take up space. It's like, no, it's not. Yeah. It's not really just because you exist doesn't mean you deserve certain things.
Yeah.
It's like everyone is told that they deserve like a certain level of living or a certain level of wage or this or that. But they're not told that you need to work for it.
They just
believe that they're entitled to that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm entitled to. It's like, you're not entitled. You need to work hard for that.
Yeah. I reckon part of that's tied into like when I was in school, it was go to uni. You want a good job, go to uni.
Yeah.
And I think
that's them wrong.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't go to uni. I got into uni, but I never went.
I got in twice. And I didn't attend. I got high distinctions on my classes, but they failed me because I didn't rock up. Yeah. And I'm like, you should be fast tracking me. If I can pass your classes without rocking up.
Oh, my attendance rate in year 12 was shocking.
Yeah.
I got fantastic grades in year 12. I ended up like a 92 ter.
Yeah.
and my attendance records were like, 45%.
Yeah.
50, I think the highest percentage the highest percentage attendance I had was for PE because I had to show up to do practical to get graded, and that was it. The rest of it was like woeful.
But I reckon that's the schooling that's wrong. It's not you that's wrong.
Yeah.
Because you're obviously smart enough to get the result.
People learn in different ways as well.
But you obviously didn't like structure, which makes sense because you've moved to Bali.
Yeah. But then again, I'm very habitual, and I like routine. I get it's been annoying the shit out of me the last 2 weeks. Like after not being able to train and not having like something to go and do.
Yeah.
Just sitting at home, just like, oh, what can I do now?
Yeah.
Like it kills
me. The world
me
is my oyster. I'll stay here.
Feel kind of lost without a routine to work to. It's and then I just end up just like, I'm like, well, if I don't have like a healthy routine, I may as well just sit down and eat 3 tubs of ice cream today.
You probably haven't filled your life up with all the bullshit people who've got too much time on their hands.
Yeah.
Their life up with, you know what I mean? I imagine you don't watch the newest reality TV show.
Oh, don't get me started.
But I imagine you don't have those things that people find to fill up the gaps, and then that becomes their routine. Yeah. One of the best things I reckon I ever did is when I didn't have a TV.
Yeah.
Like I disconnect, like it wasn't connected to the wall. So if I wanted to watch something, because there's shows, like I like watching Game of Thrones, there's shows that I like and I don't want to miss them. But if I wanted to watch a show, I had to go out of my way and download it or go out of my way and find it to watch it. So I was just watching the show that I wanted to watch.
My biggest thing, the biggest change I noticed from my personal growth, moving to Bali, was cutting news out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like the and like understanding it's a harsh thing to say on certain topics. But like being a little bit selfish with your emotion, like I find people get, when people get like far too stressed, it's because they're stressing about things they don't need to stress about. They're being upset about things they don't need to be upset about. Like when something happens to me or someone tells me something, like I go, does this directly affect me? Do I need to be upset about this? Like there's so many people, like they watch like this, you know, not, what is it? This, you know, what is it? Sunday night on Channel 7.
I know what you're talking
where they have like a terrible story about some guy on the east coast of Australia who's got dying of cancer and it's so sad and their story is so sad, and then people talk about that on Monday morning at the gym and it's like they get so involved in it. It's like, all right, yes, that is a sad scenario that but does it really need to affect you? Do you need to take that on board? Like what benefit is that going to add to your life being upset for that person? Like you're not directly involved. Like my reality, I'm like, all right, that's a sad situation. Does it make me sad? No, I don't care. I don't need to care about that.
Well, it gives you a skewed view of reality. So take the fear of terrorism, for instance. Like today is the safest place, I think, safest time in history across the world to live. Like your chances of dying from everything are the lowest they've ever been.
Yep.
And like, you know, your chances of being blown up by a terrorist in quotes, because we decide to call some people terrorists and some people don't, depending on the flavour of the month.
Depending on what colour their skin is.
Is like, you're just getting bombarded with information that's telling you that the world is a scary place and everything's going bad and everything's terrible. And it's not, if you look at the objective facts. So it's like you're getting this overload, you know, if you go by the Dunbar number and the way tribes used to work and everything, you're only supposed to be having 160, I think, people's worth of bullshit coming in. Like you're supposed to be exposed to and care about that many people.
Yeah, you can't physically take on too much. You just end up being a spiteful human being. Yeah. I think there are far too many spiteful human beings around who are just overloaded with so much stimuli because they don't understand how to
shut it off.
Yeah, like what to take on and what not to take on. And it comes down to, you get it with like being offended on things. Oh, do you know what happens when you get offended? Nothing. like it is the least productive like thing you can do about a situation.
Yeah.
And it's always subjectual, and it's always, it depends on the person. Like what offends you doesn't offend me. So saying something offends you and expecting change from it, like doesn't do anything.
It's nonsense.
It's insane. It's like, you know, if something offends you, do you know how you stop that? It's like you just don't listen to it.
Yeah.
Like that is the response. Like you can't change someone's view. So if someone's view offends you, you just don't take their view on board. That's how you stop the situation. The situation is that offends me. That person should stop saying it. No, you should stop being a fucking idiot.
people are going to say things that you don't like, and lots of people say things I don't like, and if they do, I just carry
it's
on
like
with my day.
No one makes you feel a certain way. Like, no one is responsible for your emotions.
Yeah,
it's like your emotions are your emotions. Like. Someone says, just because someone says something and then you feel sad, that person didn't make you feel sad. You let yourself feel sad from what they said.
That's like...
Like, they didn't directly affect your emotions. They didn't directly offend how you feel about something.
That's exactly some... I think it's Buddhist. Like, I'm not big on, like, what the actual... religion itself is, you know,
accurate the information is. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think there's any accuracy about any of the information. This is all just subjectual viewpoints right now. Exactly.
But like, there's some hidden gems in all religions and all philosophies. Yeah. I think, and that's one of the ones that I think I got it from a fantasy book I was reading, but they were relying heavily on Buddhism for whatever the made up elven philosophy was. But it was exactly saying that they're like, it's irrelevant if the other person, what they did was right or wrong. It's like the only thing you can control is yourself and your own actions. So if someone cuts me off in traffic, they're completely in the wrong. They're completely done the wrong thing. Mm. I've got a choice. I can get upset and angry and kick and scream, and that ruins my day. Like my choice to have that negative emotional reaction after the fact when there's nothing you can really do about it. And I can hold on to that for the entire day and I can have a shit day.
Yeah.
Or I can go, oh, that's bad. Like, I don't like that. That person's probably dangerous, but we got away with it this time. Let's continue on with my day. That's the only two choices I have. There's nothing I can do about that's going to change the fact that that person drives like a dickhead.
Yeah. I think there's, like, I love, my biggest thing with emotions is I think all emotions are real.
Yeah.
And I think what people do is they deny their emotions and then, like, harbor them.
Yeah.
They carry around all this shit for later.
Especially
so guys. It's like, say, yeah. So say, like, someone cuts you off in traffic. That makes you feel angry. There's nothing wrong with feeling angry about that.
Yeah.
Just make sure you take the moment to feel angry. Like, someone cuts you off in traffic, sitting there in your car and swear and be like, oh man, that fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy. But then after that moment has passed,
move on.
Yeah. And then I find that's a much healthier way to go about it. Like, there's no, like, rather than being like, oh man, that motherfucker. And then for the rest of the day, you're having a bad day because you're like, man, that guy in traffic cut me off and that makes me mad, and you didn't process it.
Yeah. And yeah, like, and then it then affects everything else you
like move. if I'm not saying like because no one is responsible for making you feel a certain way that you should only feel happy. That I'm not saying that at all. It's like, cuz there are far too many people that are just like, oh, it doesn't affect me, and I just feel happy all the time, and I think that's a load of shit.
Yeah,
that's
not real. You're on and drugs, you're lying. Yeah.
If you feel generally happy all the time, you are a fucking meltdown waiting to happen.
I'm a happy guy.
Yeah, you know what a functional human being is? Is someone who, like, feels and experiences their entire range of emotions, processes them, and then moves forward. Someone steps in your toe, it's okay to get angry. It means your circuitry is like, you're put together properly. Like, you're not going to be like, oh, sorry. It's like, no. Like, ah, fuck you, dickhead. It's like, like that's normal. That is a normal process. It's not.
No one teaches you that, though. It's coming full circle back to school. Like, I was talking to someone the other day. I'm like, there's important shit I'm 30. I've kind of figured some shit out. There's a whole heap of shit that I haven't figured out.
Yeah.
Like, why wasn't there a class where someone taught me about meditation and, like, accountability for your emotions and your experiences?
Don't get me, because there's this. We were talking to.
I think in schooling, it's just so far politically correct now. It's impossible. It's like,
we don't also. It's know not what's
your.
Going on.
It's not your fault. You feel angry. You know. Yeah. Oh, it's all just. Yeah, it's. Fucking two nights.
There is a lot more mental health support available now on a broad, like, across a whole heap of different mediums. Like, what you were saying, why didn't anyone I should probably find out, because I deal with teachers all day, every day, but, well, your sister is a teacher. I know that there's a lot more support through, whether it's the right type of support for kids in schools now, but Dad and I were talking about this the other day, because back then, and even when we were young, the stigma around mental health was like, well, you can't have, like, anxiety and depression. That's not, you know, you can't have that. Like, that's best.
I think it's almost gone a little bit too far.
The other way now,
where it's becoming an excuse.
Yeah, if you don't have a mental health problem, then there's probably something wrong with you.
I feel like it's like, you're right. Like, back then, it's like, if you had a mental health problem, you didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, that was your problem to deal with. Now it's accepted, but it's not like, it's like, if you have a mental health problem, there is nothing wrong with you, or there's nothing that makes you less of a man or less of a person for saying, I have a problem, I need help. Okay, and then going out and getting that help.
Yeah,
but I feel like people are using it a bit too much as a crutch now. They're like, I can't do that because I have anxiety,
and that's not what I'm talking
about. And it's like I have anxiety, and I can't do that, and I can't do this, and I can't do that, and then it becomes more of an excuse to stop them progressing forward.
Yeah, and then you keep going deeper into the hole. Yeah, like, more so than anything, ever since we started doing this, like, the whole concept of DCE came about because we got to the point where we were having, like, out camping one night, sitting around a campfire, having a few beers. And we just had a conversation like this, essentially. And you realise that, like, the example I used was a guy that I did a course for work with, who is, he's like 6'3", 6'4", was over in the UK, wanted to get into the SAS, like, the most alpha, like the Sebastian of my life at that point. Like the most alpha male that you...
The pretty Sebastian Sebastian.
Yeah.
But talking to him, like going through it, like I speak to large groups of people, so they sent me on this course to work through like body language and overcoming the anxieties attached to, because nobody likes speaking to big groups of people, I've found.
Oh man, yeah. Some people just struggle with looking someone in the eye when they talk to them.
But talking to Jack, he, like when he got up and sort of went into a bit of his story, I was sitting there, I'm like, fuck, you've got all the same like anxieties and like fears that I do, and I'm looking at you thinking like you can bend steel with your bare hands, and you've got exactly the same problems I do, and you're feel like I feel better knowing that you've got the same issue, because then you move past it, you grow from it. So now sometimes I'll be like,
so people's self perception, like everyone's biggest enemy is their self.
Yeah,
you know, the way you view yourself, like if dramatically affects your life.
But that's why if there isn't that stigma attached to mental health, which I don't have, like I'm happy, like open to talk about it. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah,
that's why I know sometimes I'll do something, and sometimes I'll get like at work, if I go and I know that I've got an exceptionally big group of people, you know, like 500 or 600 people I've got to stand up in front of and talk to, I feel that anxiety, but I know what it is. So it's like, okay, I'm just feeling anxious. I'll concentrate on my breathing and focus.
Yeah, you've got technique.
I feel like as a community, we're not quite there with mental health yet.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's definitely better than what it was. Whereas before, it was like you just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Now it's become a little bit like we're not empowering people with. I suppose empowering is not the right word. We're not letting people know that it's like it's become using it as an illness. Okay, it's an illness, but it's an illness you can live with.
It's okay to not be okay.
Like everyone feels shit sometimes.
Yeah.
But like we need to like encourage people that have a mental illness to be like, all right, you can be a normal functioning member of society, and this doesn't have to drag you back.
Yeah, this doesn't
have to be that like, you know, dark person in the corner of the room just like keeping you from doing having a normal life.
But that's all in the mindset, as well, in that individual's mindset. Because if you don't have, and you'll start getting shitty at me, but if you don't have a growth mindset, he doesn't like anything motivational, because successful people don't like motivational. But if you have like the mindset you obviously have, like one of the most, I think you might have even said it, it was someone when Conor McGregor got knocked out, and the first thing he did was get up and start looking at what he'd done wrong and started analyze. Like it wasn't like,
it wasn't like,
I've been beaten, fuck that guy. It was like, yeah, no, he did this, and this is why I lost, and so this is what I'm going to work on. Yeah. It's having that mindset. Whereas, yeah, some people hide behind it. They're like, oh no, I've got depression, I can't do that.
Yeah,
so, well, what else is it going to stop you from doing?
But what else? Yeah, well, yeah.
That's a lot of those people don't like, and that's kind of some of the stuff behind the nonsense that is this as well. Is that I don't necessarily attach responsibility for that outcome to those people themselves, because I think a lot of those people don't have information. So like, if I say, for instance, if I went
it comes to the doctor, it's so many things.
Yeah.
Mm.
But if I've got depression, just to pick one, and I go to the doctor, they'll give me a pill and they'll send me on my way. Unless I get lucky and get some
good doctor.
It comes down to your support network too. Yeah. It's like, man, I'm very fortunate that I had a very loving, caring, supportive family growing up.
Yeah.
And sometimes I hear about like friends who didn't have that, and I hear about their childhood, and it's so difficult for me to understand or even comprehend like some of the problems they go through, because it's just that problem wasn't about like every family has problems and everyone goes through their battles through childhood, but like those I didn't have, like we had more like financial hurdles that we went through, with parents losing jobs and struggling through minimum wage and things like that, you know. Not like I was never emotionally or physically abused or voided. Like I never had to worry about my parents, you know, not caring for me or not wanting the best for me. Just because we didn't have money, we didn't have money. It's like they still were emotionally and mentally nurturing human beings. And I feel like that's more important. Oh, whereas, I hear about people who, you know, friends who just didn't have that, and it's just so hard to comprehend that situation. when you haven't experienced it.
Well, I think that was it. We were sitting around the fire having a chat, and like we were kind of realizing that we were just kind of bouncing our own shit off of each other.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, well, this is the type of stuff that I'd be, you know, I went to a boys' school as well. So I think that kind of gives you a little bit of extra shut your mouth, yeah. Don't talk about it. But I'm like,
I went to an all boys' school. Yeah.
So I'm talking to James and I realized this is the type of stuff that I've been preconditioned my entire life to, like, yeah. to never show weakness to another guy.
Yeah, preconditioned.
And I'm like, and I'm chatting to him around a fire
just
after
before
a beer.
Or after we kissed.
It was before we kissed. That was a beautiful moment. But yeah, which is, I'm talking to Mike, oh, this is like, I feel vulnerable and I feel upset about XYZ. And yeah. I'm like, oh, I feel heaps better now. The fact that, because that I can just tell someone that.
Yeah.
And that comes back to your support networks. If you haven't got,
if you don't have a support network,
you're screwed.
That's what I said, and it's that old school mentality that if you the way you deal with your problems is by yourself and a bottle of bourbon.
Yeah.
Mate, you ain't helping anyone.
Yeah.
You ain't helping anyone, you definitely ain't helping yourself.
It's a quick fix that causes a longer problem.
Yeah, which is too consumed in band-aiding the situation rather than getting to the root cause.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
It's a tough one because I don't know the solution.
No.
But that's why we're just trying to put as much information out there as possible. Like, you know, we've got a lot of the articles at the moment on our website are more like, if you're trying to start a new diet, here's one. But I've got one of them about meditation, yeah. mindfulness meditation for anxiety and bits and pieces like that. It's like, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist. Yeah. I don't really know what I'm talking about, which is pretty apparent.
Mm.
But here's something I tried, and it dialed it down from a 10 to a 9. It helps for me. It's something I can do, and if I'm in a rough spot,
yeah.
I can try this or I can try that instead of feeling helpless.
I feel like one of the biggest things people face, the biggest hurdles people face is getting over past trauma.
Yeah.
Past emotional trauma. People carry around a lot of past emotional trauma with them, and then it comes back to bite them in the ass with, you know, like future relationships, relationships with friends, family, and partners, and like that. That's huge. Hey man, it's like it affected me. And literally like what made me get over that. And it was like the harshest information you can ever be told. And it was just like one day it just finally clicked. It's just like, if you're holding it, how do you let go?
Yeah.
And it's like, no one knows how to let go. It's like, I don't know how to let go of the past. I can't let go of the past. I can't let go of what happened to me. And then someone said to me one day, they're like, right. It's like, it's the same as if I give you a smoldering bit of, like, a smoldering rock. If I give you a hot rock and I put it in your hand and it is burning you, it is physically hurting you, right? It's like, how do you let go of it? You just let go of it. Yeah. Like, that's the only thing you do. You just let go. You make a conscious decision in your head to go, I'm going to let go of the thing that's burning the fuck out of my hand right now because that's in my best interest. And you let go of it and you drop it. And that's it. And then I sat back in my chair like someone just like flicked a switch. And I'm like, literally the only way to let go of a situation is for you to accept it and let go of it.
Yeah. Have you seen the stuff they're doing with, it's like early day research. They're doing it with like psychedelics now where they're using a lot of psychedelic, not here, take this pill and go out into the wilderness.
That sounds like great.
Yeah. It's in a controlled, it's with a psychiatrist and it's in a controlled environment, but they're doing it for like drug addiction and like severe mental, like can't function, severe mental illness, et cetera, et cetera. And they're like, I can't remember what it was. This is me normally not remembering shit. It was like one of those things like drug addiction, like long-term drug addiction or like long-term mental illness, something that you basically go, well, that person's like in a real struggle.
Mm.
And within, I think it was three sessions with it was alcoholism, I reckon.
Mm.
It was three sessions of using this psychedelic, like small doses with guided therapy from a registered therapist.
Yep.
They cured the addiction. Like they'd linked it back to like a past trauma, essentially, that someone wasn't dealing with. So they were able to guide them through reliving and accepting
shit. And that's changed, like it all goes back to, we're back to, isn't that mad?
Yeah.
Is people's reality. And that's what giving people those drugs. Talk to our anonymous friend who helps us do things, who has sampled all sorts of psychedelics, and he'll tell you, like, it's like, I feel like him taking, talking to him after he's had those experiences has helped me change my realities in some ways. Like some of the stuff he'll say.
Just hearing just about like, it, yeah.
Ah, that's actually a really interesting way to think about stuff.
Like, wow, you got really fucked up one night.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Like, it's changing, it's helping people change those realities. And like you said, like letting go. Like,
I feel like it changes, it like most like illicit substances, they break down the barriers in your mind that you put up day to day to try and protect yourself.
Yeah.
And to try and protect your ego, try and check your like projected self, how you view yourself. Like they take down those walls. Like, I don't know if you've ever sat on a couch with another person after having a hit of MDMA and you just flow and talk to them and just like you find things that you didn't know were in there, because you just it's stuff that you've put walls up and then you've pushed it down and suppressed it so you don't need to talk about that.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't talk about that until all of a sudden you kind of, you don't have you flooded your brains with endorphins and all those walls come down and suddenly you're able to talk about anything.
It's like your patterns you were talking about. You know, you're driving to work. There goes your pattern.
Yeah. It's gone.
You're outside the box.
Break down those walls.
Because like, I just, like, well, you're, and you're, when we went to Bali, and I remember the first few days there, I'm like, hey man, let's like take our scooters and just ride down that road. You're like, nah. No.
Yeah.
You're just going to fields, man. There's nothing down there. I'm like, how do you know? Oh, I drove down there on the one day and like, I'm just like, fine, I'm going to fucking, I'm driving down that road. Like, I'm going to go see what's down there. And you were like, no, it's two lefts and then a right to the gym. Two rights and then a left to go to Old Man's and then the hotel's over there and that's it. I'm like, okay. Well, I'm going on an adventure. Eventually, you did. It was good for me.
Because I was going mad that first week.
I ride in the general direction of where I think I need to go. Yeah. And then if I can't find it, then I just pull out maps. Yeah. I'm like, once I'm lost, I'll search where I'm going. But I'll just get a kind of... I'm like, oh, I got to head east.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we'll go. Let's go east. throw some leaves in the wind and see how we go.
Oh, well, I made a conscious decision when we went over to train that I didn't want to take my phone anywhere with me, because I was trying to like remove myself from technology a little bit and just have a bit of time to let my, had a heap of stuff going on before we went away. And I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to go and
decompress.
I'm just going to turn my brain off for a little while.
Decompress from normal life.
Mm. And I love, like, I was giving you shit, but sometimes we needed to use maps. But for the most part, like, you know, we'd be sitting somewhere. And like, I've only done it once. I took a photo for the podcast just before. But other than that, like I enjoy these sessions because for some reason I don't look at my phone while we're doing podcasts, because the first time I did it, you yelled at me for looking at my phone, which is fair enough. Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm just going to like not use it.
It's because you're in the moment. You're actively engaged in a conversation, which is rare in today's world.
Natural lull.
Yeah, it's happened again.
Is anyone else hungry?
I'm getting pretty hungry.
Yeah, well, I think I could eat. Well, that's a I could eat. That's a sore subject at the moment.
Yeah.
For everyone who doesn't know, I have to eat soft food for the next 4 weeks because I've just had a titanium plate put in my mouth to correct a broken jaw. So the availability of food that I'm allowed to eat is quite small at the moment.
It's going to pose a challenge.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't go and buy brunch ingredients, because that would have been a really bad time for you.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, eggs, bacon, halloumi.
Anything that requires chewing is out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit. It's going to be ice cream.
Yeah.
pretty much I've been told is if I can't mash it between the roof of my mouth and my tongue, I can't eat it. Oh.
Yeah, wow, that's true. And I had a wisdom tooth out and I thought I was struggling.
Yeah, at least that's only for like a few days until it gets better. This is like 4 weeks. It's like, oh.
It's not fun.
Yeah. Rough.
We should be able to find a cafe somewhere that does like smoothie rolls or something.
Yeah, I pretty much just, as long as it's not steak.
Yep. Do you want to call it time of death?
1:17. Or 12:40, depending on how you look at it.
Is there anything you wanted to talk about? So we call people that listen mums, because it's mums. Just his mum and my mum.
Oh, okay.
Maybe your mum now.
Yeah. To all the mums out there.
All the mums out there.
Yeah.
Say hi to your mum for me.
Say hi to your mum for me. Sign off for the final question.
Wait, we did get one question.
Did you get one question?
We got one question. It's from my wife. She wants to know where you got your puppy rash guard.
My puppy rash guard. Okay, for everyone that doesn't know, I have a custom-made puppy rash guard that I wear to jiu-jitsu tournaments, which is basically just a long sleeve collage of puppies. I just contacted I used to have a clothing sponsor from Melbourne, but they shut down. That used to make jiu-jitsu gear, and I sent them a photo one day of a puppy jumper that I'd seen on Pinterest, and I just sent it to them. I'm like, yo, can you make me a rash guard like this? And then 3 weeks later, they landed one at my door, and everyone thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah,
because there's nothing quite like going to a jiu-jitsu tournament. There's nothing more demoralizing than not only just being beaten, but being beaten by a guy in a puppy rash guard.
That's why I like that tuxedo one that you gave me. You would have seen that one. It's got like a long sleeve rash guard, which I've now inherited, and it's got like a tuxedo print on it. Yeah. So I just love, like, you roll into training and they're like, what are you wearing? It's like, it's my suit.
There's nothing quite like being beaten by
a dude in a puppy rash guard.
And it's something quite, jiu-jitsu is like quite masculine too. It's like, it's basically, when you're tapping someone, you're saying, like, ah, I kill you.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, your hair in a top knot at the time?
Yeah, well? It's like my hair will be in a pony. I've got long hair, so it's like my hair's in a ponytail or braided back. And, you know,
Because I'm a man. Get in the ring with me, you naughty boy.
Let's cuddle.
Struggle snowball.
Let's cuddle aggressively till someone decides they don't want to do it anymore.
Story of my life.
It was just a custom made one.
It's hard to find, like, a lot of MMA gear is very MMA orientated. You know what I mean?
It's like skulls and knives, and it's like horrible tribal. No fear, it's just it's not very flattering. It's like, I'm not a brute. I'm like, I generally like weird stuff.
She's a lovely boy.
I like wearing spats and leggings. Yeah. They're just tough to find. Like, most of the time, I just buy the girls' ones.
Yeah,
it's a little less,
room in the front.
A little less crutch room. But, you know,
What do you do?
There's like, I don't want to wear like a plain pair of like black spats or one with a fucking massive tap out and knife on the side of it. Like, cool. Coming in for battle. Like, I'd rather buy, like, I've got My Little Pony spats. I have my favorite pair of spats has clouds and rainbows and two jiu-jitsu ponies on it. And it was, it's two ponies wearing gis. One's tapped out and the other one's like, he's the winner. But they are for females. Designed for females, and I wear them and they're very comfy.
It's a hole in the market though, because most jiu-jitsu stuff is MMA stuff. It's made for people that are going to train for 3 weeks and you never see them again.
Oh, they're made for the stereotype.
Yeah. Which is not. And I've never met anyone like that actually sticks around.
I don't know anyone that. I don't know anyone that functionally does, like MMA professionally, that fits that stereotype.
Yeah.
That, like, that massive brutish, like, they're
the supporters.
Yeah. They're journeymen. You know, they're around for a couple of fights. They're not in it for the long haul because they don't have the mentality to go.
The only people I can think of that kind of meet that mentality. It's the guy that gets beaten sparring once and you never see them again.
Yeah.
There's like, it just takes that one time that someone bigger and stronger or with more technique just fucking did back to them what they've been doing everyone else.
Yeah, everyone that sticks around it for sticks around with it like professionally for a long time, they're generally like socially, they're generally like the socially awkward nerdy people.
Yeah,
that's because that's why you take up martial arts.
Yeah, that's why you take up martial arts, because you're obsessed.
You're picked, like, on.
Because I wasn't very good at football, so I thought I'd go and try something else for a while.
It's like MMA to me isn't so much a hobby and more an obsession.
Yeah,
like I physically get obsessed with movement, with the movement patterns I'm trying to get better at. It's an obsession. Like, I don't, like, sometimes I don't say, like I say, it's hard to say, like, oh, I love it. It's like, no, I'm like physically obsessed with it to the point where it's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
Kind of like, if I was obsessed this much with like drugs, I'd be in deep shit.
Yeah.
You know, if I was obsessed this much with stealing cars, it's kind of a healthy obsession, but at the same time, it's still an obsession, and that's semi-unhealthy the amount of time and effort I put into it.
I'm the same though. I've always had an obsessive personality.
Yeah.
And I just try and channel it into something healthy. So like, if Dee hadn't left, you like talk to her about like food and diet. Like if I'm eating healthy, like it's not fun to be around. Like I get real regimented with it. Like I have to eat this food at this time and this time and this time. Same with training. Like if I'm training properly, I'm like, no, like I have to go to training today. Like there's nothing. Training's at 5.
Yeah.
We've moved the entire day around because that can't be moved. Like that has to happen.
I am horrible with food. Like I've never had to like. Some of the guys at the gym really struggle and they have to use dietitians to do their weight cuts.
Yeah.
Like I'm super disciplined with doing my weight cuts and doing my diet, which also means that I only have two settings, which is preparing for a fight.
I believe I posted something about this the other day. It's like I've got two settings.
Two settings. Like preparing for a fight where everything is like It's everything is counted and structured and I know what I have to eat.
And then it's like
unsupervised child in like physically just eating to the point where I can't fit any more food in and made myself feel sick. And I'm like, why did they do that? Because I can.
Yeah.
Just non-functioning adult. Like, what did you do today? I ate 12 Krispy Kreme donuts and a pint of Ben and Jerry's. Were you hungry? Not at all.
Not even a little bit.
Just did it because I was kind of bored and I had nothing to do.
I have diabetes now.
just eating stuff that normally you wouldn't even want to eat. It's like, what are you having? I'm just having like, why did you eat 12 pieces of toast?
Yes.
Because there were no limits on what I could have. Because
the Nutella ran out.
I'm not trying to make weight for anything. I eat what I want.
Yeah, that's it. That's why it's like, it's amazing like the weight change I go just through, because I've just had 2 weeks of like not caring. And I went from a comfy like 77 kilos when I weighed in to like, I don't know, I stepped on the scales the other day when I was all like bloated and fat and I was like 89. I'm like, fuck! Yeah. Like, that's not even the worst of it. After my last fight, the water cut and the water load like really affected the way my body absorbed like sodium and water. So post fight 72 hours, I was like almost like inflamed everywhere. Like my body would just like swell up and retain so much water that I was like, I was puffy. I had cankles and swollen legs and I was just full of water. Like I had a really skinny face. Like I was still sucked out in my face and I still had like veins popping out my arms. My belly was just a giant bubble. And from the tits down, I was so bloated that after 72 hours, I went from 77 kilos to 93. And it was just like, how does my body physically in 3 days put on 16 kilos? I'm like, how does this happen?
How does this work?
Well, this doesn't make any sense. And it's like, and then it's like, after I had to detox for a week to get my body back to normal. And then it just lost 7 kilos. You know, like my fluctuation over 2 weeks went from like 77, 93, and then back to like 86. And 86 was a normal weight. It was just my body was, I don't know how, but was carrying set like 6 kilos of fluid
extra
around.
Extra water.
Just fluid retention. It was panicking. It was like, we haven't had any water in a week. Let's keep it all. Like, not letting any of it go. Just like, it's like, there's food here. Let's hold it. Hold it. Hold it. Hold it. We're not allowed to let it go.
I've got one serious question for you then.
Yeah.
Because you reminded me then. What are your thoughts on like weight cutting and weight divisions?
Weight cutting.
Because you used to fight, you were at light heavyweight for your first one.
Yeah.
And obviously
I fought at light heavyweight. I used to walk around with a lot more muscle mass. I'm at a much like more comfortable weight now. Like when I'm, my thoughts on the weight cut is I don't understand why both guys it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that, like, the other guy I'm fighting is cutting weight too. I'm cutting weight. So we both go through this horrible process in the last 2 weeks of the last 2 weeks of training camp, which is the last 2 weeks that really where like the last of your weight comes off, you're so carbohydrate depleted that your training sessions become harder and less productive, like because you're just kind of like you it's when you're eating that limited amount of carbohydrates, it's your body like struggles to function. Let alone like function properly. So you're just tired all the time. So it's like we both go through this horrible period in the last 2 weeks when we're not allowed, we're not eating properly. We overload our body with water to be able to sweat out and lose water. And then the weigh-in day, it's like the 3 days before the weigh-in day, you're consuming like 500 calories a day, like just enough to like be alive for those 3 days, and like empty out your stomach. And then you go through this horrible sweat process where you lose 2 to 3 kilos of water. Then we both step on the scales looking like fucking zombies.
Yeah.
And then the next day we rehydrate, eat, and we're both like 7 to 8 kilos heavier.
Yeah.
It's like we both like go through this horrible process to make weight and then both put on weight. It's like I love the idea that ONE FC started and Brace just took on. Which is the no weight cut rule. They want you to weigh in hydrated and they increase the weights. It's like I don't see the sense in both of us losing all this weight for one weigh-in and then putting it all back on for the next day to fight. I feel like you're going to get better fights because sometimes if you have a bad weight cut, that affects how you'll be able to perform the next day.
Exactly.
Some people are better at weight cutting than others. There are still ways around the hydration test.
Yeah.
And people like...
Which are probably even more dangerous.
Yeah. So there's always going to be ways around it. There's always going to be people who want to push the boundaries and cheat. But I feel like it's a much safer option. And I feel like you get better fights from not having the weight cut in there.
Yeah. Well, if you haven't spent 2 weeks prior fucking with your body, it means you've spent 2 weeks prior training.
You're getting people at full strength the whole time.
Yeah.
It allows you're allowing people to peak properly. So I love the no weight cut. Like I'd love to Brace if you're listening. Yeah. Actually, no, they did mention me once, but I'd love to fight like welterweight no weight cut because that's like 77 kilos is welterweight.
Yeah.
Welterweight no weight cut is 84.
Yeah.
Like I'm 84 kilos 3 weeks out from my fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I still have, like, I have to be 81 the week of my fight.
Yeah.
And I'm 81 the week of my fight with
not eating
4% body fat.
Yeah.
It's like I can't physically lose any more weight from there. From there, the last week, it's all emptying out the food that's in my stomach and it's water retention. You know, so it's like I physically can't make 77 clean. I could never do it. I'd have to massively decrease the amount of like muscle mass I have.
Yeah.
But 84, no worries. I'm strong 4 weeks out. Yeah. That's like when I feel my best.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. So if you haven't spent that time depleting your body, because then your body's not going to repair the way that it's supposed to.
Sometimes it's tough. Like when I've had the last fight wasn't so bad. The fight before that. I was happy. It was the first time I was happy that my fight was so late on the card.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel human again. I didn't feel like I could get in a cage and fight until 5-6 o'clock the next day after the weigh-in. Because the weight cut just took so much out of me.
Yeah.
That it's like I only started to feel normal again at like 6 o'clock. And then I had 4 hours till my fight. You know?
Yeah.
So it's... You just... You know, if you're weighing in hydrated, you just don't have that.
Yeah.
You don't have to rely on that recovery time. You're just good to go.
I reckon the way that Brace and ONE FC are doing it. Normally, I'm not a huge fan of like any form of like government oversight or like enforcement by organizers. Like I'm usually a pretty do what you want. But I think that's the only way you can do it because I think the advantage of being bigger goes away. The closer you get to the UFC, like the more professional you get, the less the physical size advantage makes a difference.
Let me put it this way: it's like The only reason I'm cutting to 77 right now is because all the guys that are my size are cutting to 77. I have no choice. It's because if I fight, like, I can comfortably make 84 kilos. Like, I fought a couple of fights at middleweight.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't cut, like, my last fight at middleweight, I didn't cut any weight for it.
Yeah.
Like, I woke, like, day of the weigh-in, I ate breakfast and I ate lunch. And then I just made sure I didn't drink too much water until I got to the weigh-in. Stepped on the scales, like, 83 point something, eating a protein bar.
Yeah.
You know? But the guy I fought had cut like 5 or 6 kilos to make 84. So the next day we got in the cage and I'm still 84 kilos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And, this guy
is 92, 93. It's just like at that stage, it's an issue.
Yeah.
So it's just, so at that point we went, all right, well, I have no choice but to start fighting at 77.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way I'm going to fight guys that are my size. If I comfortably walk around at 84 and weigh in 84 naturally, that guy's cutting weight to make 84, he's going to be bigger.
Hmm.
So you're kind of forced into cutting weight.
Yeah.
Because of the culture that it already has. So you take away that weight cut and all of a sudden you don't have to worry about it.
Have ONE FC got the new weight divisions as well? Or am I remembering that wrong? The ones that California's sanctioned.
No, I'm not sure. I don't think so. They just do what they want anyway.
Yeah. Because I think that's the other benefit is that between some of the weight, like, it's a big gap between some weight divisions. It's
some,
like,
are, yeah.
It's like if I was, like, I fought at welterweight.
Yeah.
But under this, like, I'm not big enough to fight at welterweight if I was still doing it.
Mm.
So, but I think I'm too big for lightweight.
It's too big
cut. So it's like, what the fuck? 70, would you do?
Like 70 to, it takes away some of that. You need some of those in between ones.
Yeah.
Because having, you know, 7 kilos between the division, I mean, that's huge. I mean, 7 kilos is massive. The difference between being able to make welterweight, losing a couple of kilos to make welterweight.
Yeah.
So say you walk around at 80.
Yeah.
It's like losing a couple of kilos to make welterweight or having to lose 10 to make lightweight. I'm like, that's massive.
Yeah. I like what they do in the lighter divisions. Like, I like that 10 pound, 5 kilo.
Yeah.
Like, just continue
like
that.
Like 10 pounds, 10 pound, 10 pounds all the way through. That'd be...
That might be the OCD coming out, but I like
the... It keeps it consistent.
Yeah.
I mean, wrestling, that's why I don't understand. Like, say, like, wrestling in the States.
Yeah.
Which is where the divisions came from. They took wrestling divisions and made them MMA divisions with the weight cuts. But wrestling has way more divisions than that.
Yeah.
Like, they have a person for every... They have a person every 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Or every 5 pounds sometimes. Once it starts getting lighter, they do, like, doing 120, 125, 115. You know, so they have that.
Yeah.
But in MMA, we got these, like, sort of, like, sparsed out divisions where you say, like, we go 135, 145, 155, and then we go 170, 185. So we start going 15 pounds difference.
Yeah.
And then it's like 185, 205. So they just decide to go 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's huge. That's massive.
Well, it's what, 60 for last.
Pardon?
Is it between light heavyweight and heavyweight, 60 pounds, isn't it?
Yeah. Like 90, you go, you can either make 93 kilos or 120.
Yeah.
That's massive.
That's a big difference.
That's huge.
I think that's why you see these like chubby heavyweights.
Yeah.
It's like, because there's no division for them. Like, they shouldn't be fighting in that division. But yeah. if you can get up to 120, why would you not keep eating and keep getting bigger for that division?
It's hard. But it'd be nicer to have... I saw they introduced... His welterweight's 170.
Yeah.
So they introduced a 175.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I saw that and went, oh, you know, 175 would be like an extra 5 pounds is great. That's my water cut gone.
Yeah.
You know, or that's an extra. I'd love to see those divisions though with the hydration test.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like as much as I go, oh, that'd be easier for me to make.
Yeah. You're still going to have
the same. It's also, I'm just going to get some guy who. I'm just going to get some massive middleweight who all of a sudden goes, I couldn't make 170, but I can make 175.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Instead so of being 93 to like, oh. 84, it's 90 to 80.
Yeah, it's just like, oh man, you're just allowing people to be even bigger again. It's just, you're going to get some guys who want to fight it closer to their natural weight. And then you're going to get guys that their body's designed for cutting weight. Like, I know guys that fight welterweight, and when they step in the cage, they're 90 kilos.
Yeah.
Like, my body couldn't do that. My frame's not built to do that. Like, yeah. I don't understand how they do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how you can physically weigh in at 77 and then your frame fill back out to 90. Yeah. But some people can.
What's happening to your body?
Yeah, fuck.
Yeah.
How much damage are you doing to your metabolism and, like, yeah, all of your internal organs?
Yeah, I think I'm pro no weight cut. I'm all for being a better athlete walking around at my fighting weight.
Is that the goal then? Get one FC?
No, like people have asked me that though. Just go like, what's your goal doing this? Like, right now I'm doing it because I love doing it, and it's physically, I love doing it. I love the lifestyle, and it's making me a better person for doing it. I'd be silly if I said I don't want to fight on the UFC, or I don't want to fight on 1FC, or I don't want to fight on massive promotions. Like, I want to keep fighting better people and keep testing myself. So wherever that goes, that's where it goes.
Yeah.
No, as long as I'm still enjoying it, and I'm still being challenged, and I'm still like improving and fighting better people and having that new challenge, then I'm going to keep pushing it wherever that challenge may go. You know, it may end up on 1FC, it may end up on UFC, it may end up on, like, you know, there's that many promotions around. Like, I don't feel like UFC is like the be all and end all anymore. Like,
yeah,
it's like the sport is rapidly growing. Unfortunately, it's not going to be around. Like, I'm not going to be competing long enough to see the promotional growth in the sport, so it'll elevate it to where, like, say boxing is with pay. Like, I know I'm not going to make a lot of money doing this.
Yeah,
I know a lot of fighters know they're not going to make a lot of money doing this, and that's not the reason we do it. Do it for the challenge, so, and that longer drive. So wherever it ends up, it ends up. I just want to keep fighting bigger and better people.
Yeah, I can leave it there.
Yeah.
It's a good end note, and I'm hungry.
Time to eat.
Yeah. We probably confused the shit out of people, because anyone who's listened to, I looked at the stats before, no one listened to our second podcast, but that's probably because I released it at the same time as the first one.
Yeah.
But then our third one, people listened to again. And now there's a bit of time difference in between. But anyone who listens to the previous podcast is going to be like, why are they talking about things? Like, the other ones are all bullshit.
Yeah, the other ones are just nonsense.
The other ones are pure nonsense, whereas we actually spoke about some legitimate subjects today, so we probably broke some brains.
Yeah, we'll put that in the notes, like, in the
post. Probably should have said, just put it at the start of this one, like, sit down, hit a bong 3 or 4 times, and then listen.
Yeah. We're going to school you some information.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
All right, food time.